to meet me on the debate stage. Because as the saying goes, if you've got something to say, say it to my face.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Melanie Keller and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. You heard music by Rachel Berringer, War, Autumn Nicholas, Zemo, and Eldar Kadem. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on 2MC Bathurst, New South Wales, KXSU Seattle, Washington, WADR Janesville, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
For this program comes from KBOO members and McMiniman's Crystal Ballroom, presenting an evening with drag artist and DJ Nina Flowers on Saturday, August 24th at 8 p.m. Tickets and information for this 21 and over event at crystalballroompdx.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, 2024, and you're tuned in for KBOO's 10th LGBTQIA2S+
community panel for our Pride series, celebrating the rich and vast heritage of our queer community. Today, we are speaking to our queer musicians panel, where we will discuss the intersection of music, work, and queer identities. To join in on the conversation and speak directly with our panelists, call 503-231-8187. Again, if you'd like to join in on this conversation, call 503-231-8187. To support KBOO and programming like this, donate today at kboo.fm/give, by texting KBOO to 44321, or by mailing in a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. I'd like to start by asking everyone to please give us your name, pronouns, and age.
Do we have to give our ages?
No.
I guess since I broke the ice, my name is Catherine Goforth, and my pronouns are she, her.
Cool. I'm Kim Conyers. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm 30 years old.
I'm Thorn Hartspring. I use they, them pronouns. I'm 38. I'm Jordan DiNocenzo. I use they, he pronouns, and I'm 23.
Amazing. And then if you could all also go down the line and tell us about your gender, sexual identity, and relationship style.
I'll start. I identify as a male, and I am in a monogamous relationship style usually, and having a good time with it.
I'm a woman, I'm queer, and I'm in a non-monogamous relationship.
I'm a transgender woman. I'm bisexual, but I'm in a lovely monogamous relationship with my girlfriend.
I am non-binary, transmasculine, and I'm queer and non-monogamous.
Fantastic. Now it's time to get into the little nitty-gritty and the reason we brought you all here. Can you all tell us about your work in music, how long you've been playing, and what your music medium is? Let's start with you, Thorne.
Yeah, I have been involved in music really my whole life. My family and the community where I grew up was a singing community. I grew up singing and singing in harmony, and that has been really fundamental, I think, to my life and to my music. I started to play piano when I was pretty young, and flute as well. And I have experience singing in choirs and playing in bands. Currently, I play for the band Brassless Chaps. We are an all-queer, anti-fascist brass band. And I also do solo work. I have a loop station, and I sing original songs and covers, looping flute and vocals. And I have an album coming out, actually, sometime in the fall.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Cool. I currently play bass in a screamo band called The Names of Our Friends. I've been playing music since I was about 12 when I got my first guitar. I was in my first band when I was 15, so I've been playing in bands for about 15 years, I guess. And then I also spent a lot of time booking DIY shows, heavy focus on all ages shows, and trying my best to kind of advocate for mutual aid groups too when I can while I'm like doing that. Yeah, so I don't know, I've played guitar, bass, sung, just mostly in like punk groups, but yeah, right now I mostly just play bass in The Names of Our Friends.
I grew up in a singing family, in a musical family. My dad is a musician, so there was just always music around. I was 14 when I started taking voice lessons and started getting like really serious about singing. I didn't really know what to do like when it came to going to college, so I studied music. I've been working in classical music basically since that time, so it's somewhere between like 10 and 15 years for me. In the past couple of years, my career has started to look really different. I came out as trans about 5 years ago. And what I wanted to really start advocating for was not playing male roles, being able to show up on stage in female roles, in female costumes, which is like not a norm in the classical music space at all. So a lot of my work recently has been about advocating for showing up in public the ways I want to and the ways I want to be seen, and thinking about what trans representation is going to look like, what kinds of representation people need. A lot of things around that. Self-producing also, because those spaces don't exist.
I am currently in a project called Grolixes. I have been in that for about 10 years, and this wasn't the beginning of my musical experience, but kind of started off with just, you know, listening to really good music earlier on in my years from my mom and my dad and everyone around. But, you know, when you're drawn into theater and all that stuff, you know, you accidentally do musical theater and then you start singing really loud in public. But that's kind of how it kind of snowball effect into singing in front of people and playing your own songs. And that's kind of been a vehicle for, you know, being able to express, you know, like love or just how you're feeling about, I don't know, yourself or others around you without, you know, without anybody having to talk to them face to face, I guess. But instead you're on stage and you're amplified. So they have to read through the words. But yeah, I've been doing that for years. And it's really nice playing out here in Portland with all these people. Actually, me and Kim have played a show together early January.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Certified ripper.
Yeah. Thank you. You as well. You as well. It was a snowstorm, and it was just like so many people showed up and dire conditions that you were there.
I was there. It was dire conditions.
But it was beautiful. All the people that show up to just support music constantly out here, it's really nice to see. Keeps you going.
Amazing. And a lot of you mentioned that your love of music started in childhood, so I'd love to know who some of your biggest inspirations are when it comes to music, especially queer inspirations. Thorne, do you want to start?
I don't think this inspiration comes from childhood, but someone who I've been really inspired by is Nina Simone. Both just like the beauty and the raw power of her voice and music, but also because I believe I think this is a quote from her, but I'm paraphrasing. It's something like, the role or the duty of an artist is to reflect the times. And that's something that she certainly did, and that I agree with that sentiment. I think that it is important for artists and musicians to be speaking to the world in which they live and to be speaking to the world that they want to create. And that message could easily be a message of joy or healing. Or it could be a message of like, this is what we need to do. But I think it is really important to use the power of creativity to speak the truth and the passion and the message that we have for our world today.
Yeah, I think that's like the most like powerful reason to like make music and kind of a thing that keeps me going. Like whenever I say like, what's the point of all this? Like it's, I think the best thing you can do is like speak truth to power or try to get other people involved or something with it. I guess if we're continuing on the question, I guess to continue on that, I mean, I'll be honest, the answer I'm almost embarrassed about, because when I was a kid, I would look at all these like guitar magazines and stuff like that, because it's like what I had. And a lot of my people that are really drawn to were kind of like the glam rockers, like, and I'm going to state some names, like David Bowie and Alice Cooper and the New York Dolls. And it's weird growing up and reading about all those people again. And, and you know, that was kind of like a conflicting thing that happens. But as far as like truly like out and proud, I guess, like queer musicians, and some people may say it's a cliche, but I mean, I was very inspired by Laura Jean Grace. I remember waiting in line for a show when I was 18 years old, because I'm from Springfield, Missouri. And someone came up to me and was like, did you hear about the singer of Against Me? And I was like, no, but I love that band. And then they were like, oh, well, they decided to transition into a woman. And I remember my response was, that's weird. To which they said, I don't think it is. And that was the first time I'd ever heard anyone respond to that by saying, like, I don't think that's weird. And I just remember, like, sparks going off and being like, whoa. Like, it meant a lot to just, like, see that so openly and for it to be, like, another, like, punk rocker like I was, like, something that I really liked. So, yeah.
When I was looking at this question beforehand, like the first person I thought of was Jim Morrison. I remember like listening to my live The Doors records as a teenager, and it was just like, it was the most extreme and like radical performance that I could imagine. And that's like one of the places where I started off like being inspired by performances, because I had these really extreme feelings internally that I wanted to express, that I wanted even to like feel adequately. And that's something that I got from those performances. It's changed a lot for me. What I really look for in artists now has a lot more to do with their values. I've been like reading a lot about Brecht and Brecht's collaborations right now. People who are trying to put their values on stage and create art that's really saying something and making a stand. In classical music, most of the time, we are trying to make like some kind of really general statement that everyone in the audience can take away whatever they want to from that performance. And I get pushback from colleagues when I'm like, for example, I just got back from a gig out in Portland, Maine, and some of the in the room discussions were like, I would say things like, well, we have to decide, like, what do we want to say about this piece, like, as a group of people working together, you know? And people were like, well, but we can't, you know, approach it that way. We have to approach it from what is the audience going to think? And so I'm thinking more about, like, what kind of statement can we make as artists? And that's what I'm really inspired by. I'm really inspired also by trans women singers and the ways that people go on stage and have the confidence to use their voice, like whatever register they happen to have. I was watching the old Christine Jorgensen tapes recently. I hadn't known that she was a nightclub singer, and she has, you know, these amazing performances. I guess I care personally. I care a lot about passing, and like that she models a way to go on stage and pass as a cis woman with her singing is really important to me, because it doesn't exist in my art form. And so imagining what would that look like for me to embody, what would that look like for me to go on stage, those kind of models are really important for me.
Beautiful, yeah. And that, I think that looking up to people who like have that those huge like expressions on stage just about their queerness is, I think that's probably like my biggest inspiration would be like Freddie Mercury from Queen. As a young child, I already knew I was fruity, and then like I got handed a music video collection of Queen, and that solidified the deal, you know. And it's people like that who are able to like go on to the biggest platforms in the world. I mean, even like Live Aid, like with them. I'm using Queen as a huge example because, oh my God. And just flaunt your stuff in such a articulate way and such a masterful way, where it's like, as a musician, you're not just going up there and like saying words. You're going up there and you're giving them an intricate performance of years of dedication to your craft, because it's that important to you to be able to generate that message. And like the crowd needs to receive that message. The crowd doesn't need to create that message. And I think that's a huge thing with being up there as a performer and having these inspirations. Is it's so important to be able to hold your own individuality and be able to spread that over the people, instead of the people, you know, bottling you up into something that you aren't.
Thank you so much. And as a reminder, if you are just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 for our 10th LGBTQIA2S+ panel, taking a look at queer musicians. To join in on the conversation and speak directly with our panelists, you can call 503-231-8187. That's right, you can talk to these folks right now, live. 503-231-8187. And as a reminder, to support KBOO and programming like this, donate today at kboo.fm/give, by texting KBOO to 44321, or by mailing a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. Now, to hop back in to our very vibrant conversation, I'm kind of curious what kind of spaces as performers you prefer to be in and take up, and where you love to interact with your audience primarily.
I'll start. Yeah, I really like this. It doesn't even have to even be the space, but the bill. Having a variety of people on the bill, and not just it being like the boys club meeting again at a different location in the city. I think that's honestly, that's like the biggest thing for me. I'm not booking the shows that I play, but you know, the influence rubs off on who is doing it, and I think it's just important to have that variety. Any space is fine, especially like all ages places. Bars are fine, but they smell.
No, I think that's a really great point. A lot of times in classical music, we'll have the all-white space, and I totally agree. Like, when you go through the effort to make sure that it's a racially diverse space, and a diverse space in like a variety of ways, I think that's definitely my preference for a workplace. I think also about how I'm going to be treated. Is it going to be a place where I can show up as myself? Will I have to be perfect every day and every second, or can I mess up, and can I, whether that's singing bad notes or having a bad artistic idea? I think also a space where I'm not going to be treated as an object or a puppet by my bosses for whatever reason that is, but where I'm going to have agency over my performance, over how I'm costumed, where I'm going to have a voice in determining like what is the meaning of this piece that we're performing or offering to an audience. Yeah, I think those three things.
Yeah. I think having like right and respectful people, and knowing that there's a group of people that will look after you, is like vitally important to like any space that I'm gonna play. And again, that's kind of why a lot of the times, while I will play them, I've played them plenty, but like I'm not gonna say that like a bar is my favorite venue, because it kind of lends itself to less than respectful behavior. Not every time, but any show that's been like my most memorable one has been something that is completely pulled out of thin air. I mean, like, I feel like there's an accessibility of like needing to talk to a booker, needing to know someone at this venue. But the best shows I've been to have been in a warehouse, or was in the back of a sewer drain, or was in an abandoned castle, and someone set up a generator and said, "We're going to play music here." Even like my first shows when I was a kid, and I couldn't play shows because I couldn't get anyone to respond to me, my emails or texts or calls, I played my first shows in my garage and invited my friends to show up. And it's, I think, just that, I think somewhere where there isn't going to be a gatekeeper saying, "No, you're not going to perform here," is always something I'm going to value over the opposite.
I really like to perform in community spaces, places that are accessible in a number of different ways, financially accessible, accessible to people with disabilities. I really like to play in outdoor spaces, especially with this COVID pandemic that is still going on. I think it is really important to have places that are really safe and accessible for performers and for audience. I play at a lot of fundraisers for a lot of different groups and communities around town. And I really like to do that. I like to just be sharing the art, getting the art as close to the activism, and being able to share my message and to support causes that I care about with my music. It feels like something that is really whole.
Amazing. And kind of expanding on this topic of spaces, what has your experience been like as a musician in Portland with the music scene here?
I mean, I had a really funny experience, honestly. I moved here from Kansas City, and on my third day here, I went to a show. And I'm sorry to any friends listening, you've heard this a million times. But on my third day here, I like went to a show, and I saw a group of other trans women. And I said, "Hey, what's up, y'all?" And they basically said, "Oh, we're starting a band." And I said, "Can I join?" And they were like, "Yeah." And I'm going on tour with them next month. And so that was like, I don't know, kind of a funny thing. And then even then my roommate was like, "Yeah, welcome to Portland. Everyone plays music here." And I was like, wow, that's really beautiful. I don't know, for some reason I feel like when I heard that, when I like heard that question, saw that question, I was like, I feel like I want to say, like, not want to say, but I feel like it's like, what are the struggles of being like a queer musician in Portland, which are of course there, but I just remember the first thing that came to my mind was just this like really cool positive thing of like meeting other queer people immediately and kind of like being welcomed really quickly into the music scene here. So with ups and downs, that's the one that comes to my head immediately.
I feel like this is, I'm in such a different world, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I would love to be in, I don't even know what field to describe all of you as, but to me it's all popular pop music versus classical. You know, I would love to be in some of those spaces, but I like literally don't know anything about them. The classical scene, I hate to say it, but I'm like definitely more focused on the struggles.
That's fine. They're real. Please let us know.
The major music organizations don't hire local musicians. So, or they hire local musicians very rarely, or they hire local musicians for very small roles. So in terms of getting those big paychecks or those sustaining paychecks from local arts organizations, that's not necessarily there. I get lower fees in Portland than I get anywhere else in the country. Yeah, it's just trying to think about what to say and what not to say, but it's definitely a difficult place to work. I think the people who are like the working class artists who are trying to self-produce and trying to create something for themselves, I think there have been lots of amazing opportunities and lots of amazing work happening on a very small scale. Then the challenge is like, how am I going to survive? So yeah, definitely focus on the struggles for me. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting niche to be in the classical music scene. Honestly, there's not that many people occupying that community, I'd say, at all times.
And yet there's like more people than there are spots for musicians. Yeah.
But it's funny because it's the juxtaposition is insane with like, because I'd consider it like DIY what we're doing for the most part. And it's, yeah, it's so vast. I mean, but we all do go to Portland together, so it's not really that vast. It's so, you meet people who, you know, oh, I saw you like 3 years ago, or like we met like last show, don't you remember? But you changed your hair and like it's, you know. So it's just, yeah, it's very wild to hear that juxtaposition, you know, because it is so nice being able to be just surrounded by, like it was a lot better back in the day, like 2019 even, the house show scene, even though it was dwindling from what it was still, you could go to so many house shows and enjoy yourself and be open and be free about like your sexuality and dress however you wanted, because that's kind of what, like, let's all get crazy. Too many people are wearing camo. All right, too many people wearing camo in this city. We need to switch it up a little bit. Come on, just a little bit. But yeah, no, it was those little house shows and stuff that really provided a nice space to just try things out and be yourself.
I mean, those scenes pop up like all the time. Houses are, the nature of them is they're gonna shut down and there's gonna be another scene and you're gonna be like, there's no house shows anymore just because it's a different group of people doing them. Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, the house shows are still alive. I feel like in Portland there are a lot of musicians. There's a lot of open mics. There's a lot of jams and all of that, which is great. And I really vibe with a lot of that. But I've also struggled with getting like a lot of paying gigs. I think part of that is because I'm really terrible with the business side of things and marketing myself and trying to lock down those gigs and those festivals and stuff. But yeah, I also just kind of struggle a little bit with like monetizing music. I both definitely want to get paid for the work that I do, like composing my music and practicing and everything. But I also just want to live outside of capitalism, and I want things like music to just be something that everyone can share freely And whatever your medium is, that art is just a part of everyone's life, regardless of how much money you make or how much time you have. So yeah, there's a lot of tension there with like the business side of things and marketing. So hire me for a gig.
Yeah, isn't that the crushing thing? Like when there's just this thing where you're like, this is what I am best at. This is what I enjoy doing the most, according to like the principle of like capitalism or whatever. That means this is what I should do. But then like our society doesn't like actually really value that, or like it's just like a massive struggle to even like monetize it or get any money off of it. And you know, everyone has their like side gig and you're like, I'm a musician. The first thing is like, well, what do you actually do? And it's like, this is really my main thing. You know, this is what I, like if I'm going to make a thing I do, like a part of my personality and part of my identity, like it's going to be musician. Like,
but then if you do that, you have to make merchandise. If you're gonna make money, like like at least enough for a whole band, and you know, going to the recording studio or something.
Oh
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of the worst part about having to succumb to like the business side is, mm-hmm. You just have to sell yourself like a little company and
I guess that goes back to again like when you're like playing like bars and stuff, you have to assume that they're gonna like treat you well because they're all of a sudden like gonna decide. Like I've had really weird experiences like at a unnamed recently closed bar venue where like I played a show there that was like close to sold out, and then they gave us a check and it bounced, but the fee to like play the room in the first place was like $600, and it was like our check was for $150. Like I don't know, it's just, it's weird when you're like, there's the people that are like on the business side and they just like don't really care about actually like supporting the artists that are behind them, or don't prioritize it anyway. I don't know.
It's true. I've had a show where the bookers were, we had like a full house at the bar, and when we went up to talk to them, they tallied people's names who was showing up, and then they were gonna give the biggest band a lump sum of cash, but then when it was said that we were all gonna split it, they gave us $6.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? I mean, if it's per person coming in, per head, $10, I mean, where's the money?
You could split a Wendy's 4 for $4 with that.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that the like the quote unquote talent, the art, the musician is like not valued more than like, oh well, we have a business to run here, like as if we aren't trying to support ourselves also. Like it's just expected for us to accept like dirt, which is weird.
Mm. You know, Catherine, what is your take on this in a business sense? You're in a very different field of music, so I'm kind of curious how that plays into what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I really resonate with the idea, like part of what I liked about music was that it, you know, it felt like it was so far away from business, but I do feel like basically all I do is think about business these days. I think another element of this is like no laborer in this society is really valued. Like people who perform the actual labor in any field aren't really the ones who make the money. It's like people who are in administrative roles, and then like the what's really underneath that is like it's people who are involved in the administration of American imperialism worldwide that really make money. Opera is funded by like coal companies and oil companies and arms manufacturers. There was a opera about a drone pilot that just premiered in DC at Washington National Opera, where I was performing in May. That premiered sometime in, I don't know, January or sometime last winter. And it was funded, like the funder for that, the opera company claimed that it wasn't related, it was random, but it was literally an arms manufacturer.
Wow.
You know, like opera is functioning as not just like a propaganda wing globally, but it's also like when those companies and the people who work for those companies are the ones paying for it, it's like it's also entertainment for people who are doing so many things that I don't agree with and don't support and don't want to participate in. And I think this idea of of creating concerts where people don't have to pay at all to attend is really important. That feels like the future to me. It feels like the only context in which artistic freedom actually exists, where you don't have to please a weapons manufacturer in order to produce your work and to say what you want to say. Like, we shouldn't kill children.
I think, I mean, kind of like what the importance of like spreading your message, like Thorne was saying, I mean, like, they're trying to spread their message too. And it's like, it's part of being a musician is to like fight that and do our part too. I mean, like, recently it was brought up, you know, there was like army recruiters at South by Southwest. Like, they're trying to implement it anywhere that they can. And so when we, I think it's just important when we're doing our things, and if we have any say in what matters, to like spread our message, like, which is the complete opposite of theirs, because they're trying their hardest to spread theirs. Like, we can't just like not do the same.
And I think we have to talk about pink washing here. So like, when I go on stage at the Kennedy Center and they're presenting me as a transgender artist and like they're doing something good for transgender people, I mean, there's so many different sides of that, you know. It's so frustrating, and it's so hard to break it down and to know even where to start. But it's like my presence on the stage then becomes like a way of co-signing the military-industrial complex and saying that it's okay and that it's a good thing, and that transgender liberation depends on the military-industrial complex and participating in it, and we should be supporting it, and we should be perpetuating it. And we do have to be very active in fighting against that and saying, like, my presence on this stage is not co-signing that and is not supporting that. And I can't be free as long as those things are happening. Mm-hmm. That's like really where my artistic work is right now, to be completely honest, is like, how do I go on stage when the military industrial complex, in a very literal way, sometimes I'm only one check away from the actual whatever is going on, wherever people are getting their money. And how can I go on stage when I'm being paid by those people and yet have a real message that's opposing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's kind of downright evil. They like jingle the keys in front of you. They're like, oh, this is your dream, right? This is what you want. And it's like,
and you,
yeah,
should,
but not
it.
Like this. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you should be grateful.
Because that's the only way that trans people will have any rights. Yeah. And you know, if you don't want to get killed yourself, you should be supporting other people around the world getting killed.
Yeah, it's disheartening for sure. It's.
So, Thorne, Jordan, what are your thoughts on this? And do you feel in these spaces that you perform, you yourselves have your queer identities tokenized and used to perpetuate beliefs that you don't necessarily align with? Thorne.
That's a great question. I don't think that happens to me very much, but I think it does happen in some really like subtle and insidious ways, just some of those ways in which homophobia and transphobia are a part of our culture and a part of the way that a lot of these art forms, not that they're not intrinsic to the art forms, but just that they grew up inside of a society that is very patriarchal. I also don't do high-profile gigs at the Kennedy Center like our friend here does. I think, you know, I do just a lot more community events and a lot of events where, like, I think the, not just the queerness, but also, like, the anti-fascist or anti-capitalist values are being centered or welcomed, especially like when I'm playing with my band, but also with my solo work. I do specifically seek out queer spaces or other queer musicians or producers. Not exclusively, certainly, but for a variety of reasons, that's sort of a gravitation that happens. And yeah, I certainly agree that it's important to speak out against genocide and against the military-industrial complex. And I certainly want to be free to do that in my work. And I admire those who are in more high-profile roles, who use their visibility for that sort of messaging.
Thank you, yeah. Jordan.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like the give and take of having the having yourself in that position, is being able to broadcast this message of liberation, especially against, you know, just people who are funding, like, I mean, yeah, not out here, but like people who are funding genocide and stuff like that. Like, that can't be, oh my God, I'm losing my words right now. What am I saying? It is just important that we, I gotta move on, dude. I'm so sorry.
No.
It got to me and I was like, everyone's saying very great things. And I'm like, yeah, like I haven't been involved.
I want to say a little bit more.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Kind of a reframing of what Catherine was saying, just, but to put it more in the positive, that like there are places where trans people and queer people can be like absolutely themselves, in classical spaces, in opera, in all sorts of mediums. And I actually just saw this rock opera happen at PSU, and it was all trans actors and musicians, and it was just incredible. And it, you know, it was a community sort of thing. But shout out to those folks. Yeah, there are a lot of spaces where people can be like truly their authentic selves and really push the limits and experiment and speak their hearts. And I think it's so powerful that a lot of times when people say what's really on their heart, that it comes through to other people. And sometimes I felt nervous, like, if I say this opinion that's not mainstream, like, what's going to happen? And a lot of times it's been really powerful response. And that's how you know that you found your audience or you found your friends, is that you're really showing your true self and your true opinions, and just letting that shine.
Fantastic. Thank you. We are talking on the topics of the intersection between politics, music, and queerness. And as a reminder for you, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 for our 10th LGBTQIA2S+ panel, taking a look at our queer musicians in Portland. To join the conversation and speak directly with our panelists and ask any questions, you can call in at 503-231-8187. Again, feel free to call these panelists and absolutely grill them. 503-231-8187.
Grill you right back.
And Kate, you had a question for our panelists.
Yes, so we've been touching on some pretty heavy topics, the difficult sides of the music industry. And so I just wanted to ask how you handle periods of burnout, and what makes it worth it for you to stay in this scene?
Let me save myself because I tripped up so bad. yeah, it that's huge, because when you're doing music, like, you can be so hyper-focused on issues that surround you that it's hard to, like, oh, maybe I want to divert and, you know, think of something like, you know, like, do more research about history and stuff like that. But it's like, maybe you need, I don't know, fiction, or you need to go to the park, you need to go for a walk. That's like, honestly, that's the hugest thing, is just removing yourself completely from that intense pressure that you might be putting on yourself to maybe write a song that has a message, or to think about a performance that's going to have a broader message, and to just live. You know, it sounds really simple, but yeah, honestly, that's kind of how I handle it.
I don't have a great answer to this one. I feel pretty burnt out right now. I had a great experience on this last gig that I just got back from. I was in Portland, Maine for 6 weeks. We were working on Poulenc's opera Les Mamelles de Tiresias, or The Breasts of Tiresias. That's in French. It's a surrealist piece. Mm-hmm. it was really something. By the end of it, we had a really difficult process. We had a whole facilitated healing circle in the middle. And then we had some change and some really positive support. What was good for me about that experience was having some spaces where I could express myself artistically, where I could really think about these questions of what do I want to create, what do I want to portray. Another thing that just mattered a lot about that production for me was my collaboration with the costume designer and the conversations we had about how I like to present myself on stage and how I don't, and the different elements. We did this incredible makeup look with glitter all over my face and kind of looked like stained glass. And just being perceived by people in a way that makes me feel comfortable is so different from my everyday life and was so powerful for me, and positive. That has felt a little bit like an antidote to some of the feelings of burnout, but that's the most I know so far.
I definitely have a hard time with that one. I feel like if you ask, like, how do you deal with burnout, my answer is going to be poorly. I guess that's kind of, I have a tendency to just kind of go until I can't. Like, my body's usually the one deciding, like, nope, you're done now, which isn't healthy. But also, it's like, I feel like that's also why it's really important that I, like, always play with a band. I always have, like, a dream or a vision of, like, doing some kind of solo project, but I'll get so burnt out and, like, not be able to stay focused or anything. But, like, when you have this group of, like, friends that you're doing this thing with, there's always like someone to be like, hey, time to show up to practice, or like someone to be like, hey, do you need anything right now, or like, it's just, I think it's really important to have, to be like working with people who support you if you can, because that's the only way I can get anything done, is, you know, if I'm supporting other people and they're supporting me as well. That's just like vitally important. I don't know, burnout's funny. I feel like I've known a bunch of people who have, like, for example, like, my next door neighbor for a while was like a jazz musician in Kansas City, and he knocked on my door one day and he said, Kim, do you want my bass, like a big, like, stand up bass? And my first thought was like, yeah, absolutely. But then I was like, is everything okay? And he was like, yeah, I'm done, I'm quitting music, I'm sick of it. And I was just like, I've heard this so many times and nobody has ever meant it. Like, it's kind of just something that's always gonna come back to you. So I was like, no, man, I can't take your bass. Like, great offer, but like, you have to hold on to this. And sure enough, he was like right back to it. Like, you know, it's like a year later, but I think sometimes people don't realize that they just need to take some time off. You don't need any big proclamations, but sometimes you just get so in your head that that's what it feels like. But I think just to take a step back and to take a break, I guess that's the obvious answer to burnout, but.
I think it's very normal to have waves of creativity and commitment, especially if it's not like a paying regular job. I don't know. There's sometimes where I'm just feeling really inspired and I'm just working a lot and the song I'm working on is always in my head. And a lot of times, like, I'll work on the first verse of a song for like 2 months and then the whole rest of the song will come in like one night. A lot of times it's just like something is percolating in your brain or in your heart or soul for a long time. So even if it feels like you're not working, there might still be some musical ruminations happening. But burnout is very real, and sometimes I feel burnt out from music. But other times I feel burnt out from other aspects of my life, and music is a refuge. There's there's so much that is just coming in waves, according to the seasons, according to so many different situations of our lives. And also according to just how much free time we have. There's just so much busyness in contemporary society, and I kind of wish for all of us just more peace, more free time, more creative time.
Thank you. And speaking about more creative time, what are some of the biggest lessons you all have learned while honing in on your craft, and how have you grown as a person?
I think something that I have learned is to be really willing to make mistakes, to take risks. When my band is playing, I take solos sometimes, and I mess up all the time and I play wrong notes, and my band is really supportive of me, and I have gotten so much better from just doing it and taking the risks and embracing the mistakes. And I think that, like, trying to get away from perfectionism and just, and of course that, like, varies from situation to situation and genre to genre, like how much you have to be on or with the rest of your group. But I think some element of letting go of perfectionism and embracing mistakes and going for it is a big lesson for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely know, like, I've learned a lot about, like, if you're on stage and you mess something up, you know, a lot of times you can just keep on going. You can just, like, just keep on going right where you were. And a lot of times people don't even notice. Like, there'll be something that you're really anxious about, like, oh, I messed that up so bad. And everyone's like, that was amazing. And I'm like, no, it really wasn't. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, okay. So I kind of just had to learn to, like, accept people's, like, you know, learn to accept a compliment. I feel like that is, like, translated outside of that too. But then I guess my personal answer to this would definitely be more of, like, learning also to advocate for myself. Like, if a gig seems, like, questionably backed, like we were talking earlier, or if it's something that is dramatically underpaying you, or if it's, like, with someone that you think is, like, unsafe in the scene, it's, like, something where you, like, it's learning to not just keep your head down and to be like, hey, I can't get behind this. And then, like, I don't know. I definitely know I've had to, like, do that more through playing music than, like, a lot of other parts of my life. It's definitely a time when it comes up that I just have to advocate for myself and not just, like, keep my head down and just go with it and, like, flow. 'Cause that will just, like, build up and put you in a place that you don't want to be, and then that can carry over in the rest of your life also. So yeah.
Kim, I love that you framed your craft also as, like, how you relate with your audience, and it's not just about, like, the music, but it's about the, like, the totality of your performance.
Yeah, I
think one thing that's been a big lesson for me is, like, you don't know if you're gonna make people angry until you actually do it. So, like, giving myself that permission, not just to take risks, but, like, to test it and to find out, like, what's the result really going to be if I say the thing on stage that I really want to say. I think philosophically, deciding that how something feels for me is going to be more important than if someone else thinks that it's good or right, or if it's their definition of how singing is supposed to be. That has been a really important both musical and life lesson for me. And I also thought of something that my friend Haley said recently on that last gig. Like, she said, I have to accept, like, how my body is or what my body is before I try to change anything. And that was a really powerful perspective for me.
That's beautiful, thank you. We are coming to the end of our panel here, and we're gonna wrap up with Artie and I's favorite question, which is, what is a fond memory of queer joy that you've experienced, either tied to your music or not?
I mean, I don't know. I have a hard, I guess I think of, like, this has happened a few times, but I think of like one particular person who I honestly don't even know the name of. They were like, just like a younger trans woman just came up to us and was like, wow, that set was so amazing. And like, it made me cry. And I was like, whoa. And I kind of remembered that, like, I don't know, I in my life have like looked up to a lot of other queer musicians. And it was, in fact, for me personally, queer musicians specifically, who gave me the realization that I can be myself, that I can come out, that I can do it, because the queer musicians were the people that I like looked up to the most. And so it was really interesting when this person said, that was amazing, it made me cry, like say that it had an impact. The idea that I could also be doing that for somebody else just like brings me like, just elates me, like just brings me a lot of joy personally.
back in the day, we used to play at this place called The Web, and that was a huge springboard for me for meeting a lot. Actually, I could consider it the reason why I'm here, and I even know you, Artie. But that was just a house, about 5 or 6 people, like a million cats, and it was full of only queer people, you know, and that was a beautiful space to be able to, I got to basically live there. I was a teenager, like 18, and I got to stay with all these, what I consider older adults who are like 23, 24 at the time, which is hilarious. And I got to see how adult queers functioned in the city and how shows were built around the inclusivity. And it was just some of my favorite times in life, and I haven't been able to really get back that kind of little community. I hope to see it again, but that was a beautiful moment, having a little house and a little group of people who put on shows that were all queer, and it was very
where my brain wants to go with this, like right away, is like, okay, let's deconstruct what queer joy means. But I think like seeing myself in a way that makes me feel at home in my body and like I recognize myself is definitely a big thing. I think meeting trans artists all over the country and from all over the world and getting to have that in-person time together and getting to have some of those really deep conversations about our experience has been extremely joyful for me. It's funny. I think it's really along the lines of what other people are saying. It's like when we can be together, when we can inspire each other and be inspired, when we can make change for the next generation, when those people come up to us and say, I'm doing something different because you did something different or you helped change my perspective and, or, you know, whatever it is.
I feel like I don't have a single example to share, but just like there's been a lot of queer joy for me in performing and in other aspects of my life as well. But you know, I love attention and I love applause and I love to see people dancing in the audience.
Real, honestly.
Yeah, so I, you know, and you pair that with like feeling good about your performance and hearing your own voice amplified. Maybe this is like an ego joy more than a queer joy. I don't know. I do play in a queer band, and we play for a lot of queer audiences. And it's just great to see people just getting into it and dancing and feeling free and feeling in community. And it's so good as an audience member, and I think that it's even better as a performer to be a part of that alchemy.
Thank you all. And while I have an extra 30 seconds on the clock for us, you know, I want to address, you know, what you said, Catherine. What is queer joy? And I think a big reason why we wanted to put on these panels is, you know, so much conversation about queerness is the sort of fetishization of our pain and our struggles, and people love eating that stuff up in the media, but not as often do we get to speak about the beauty in being queer, the community in being queer, and just moments where we're not just accepting who we are, but we're proud of who we are. And I think we had a really great example of that for all the panels. But from the bottom of our heart at KBOO, this has been really fantastic speaking to all of you. So to Thorn, Kim, Catherine, Jordan, thank you all so much for joining us. I also want to thank my co-anchor today, Kate Chase, who is also the engagement coordinator here at KBOO. Special thank you to Sherry Morsch, who is board opping for us this evening. Thank you so much to our chief engineer, Arthur Risotto. And I am Artie Wall, closing out on our 10th LGBTQIA2S+ panel, celebrating queer musicians in Portland. Stick around and keep listening. Thank you.
It should revolutionize the way they work.
Childless cat ladies. Childless cat ladies creeping around, nothing but cats on our minds. Cats running around with their tails in the air, they're flashing their feline behinds. Childless cat ladies, young and old, cats are our pleasure and joys. They warm up our laps when the weather is cold, and we spend on tuna and toys. Cats can't vote, but we sure can. They need us to do it and how. We'll take our cats to the polling booth, and we'll vote with a mighty meow.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election.